This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, hello, and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Football Network. Joining me today, I've got Blake and Kim. How are we both after a second 0-0 draw in a row?
Not too bad, considering.
It's just okay. It's just okay.
we'll take sort of. It feels like we've got like the glass half full and glass half empty here. So I'm kind of keen, actually. One of the bits on the running order is to talk about perception of the game. And sort of how we're feeling as Wolves fans at the moment. So I was going to say, I'm really happy you've both got slightly different moods. But guys, we're going to be talking about the 0-0 draw against Burnley, some stuff kind of going on around Wolves at the moment, the run-up for the December fixtures, as we're now in Advent, guys, and also do a little bit on Liverpool as well. We do have our Liverpool preview show that Little Dan has put out today, so go check that out as well. Let's get right into the game. As I mentioned, it was our second 0-0 draw in a row, or you can look that we've kept three clean sheets in a row, depending on, I guess, how we're looking at it. Guys, we'll start with the lineup. We knew Neves wouldn't be playing through suspension. I think the only one which I guess was up for debate was Traore or Trincao, with Podence also unavailable for COVID reasons. Were you happy to see Traore start? Would you have preferred to see Trincao? I know he's played at the weekend, but Blake, what was your sort of reaction first?
I think it's sort of a double-edged sword, because I think they both have their cons. And I just kind of feel like no matter which one you choose, you're just going to end up frustrated at the end of the day. I don't blame Bruno, because there's nothing else we can really do until Neto comes back. But yeah, it is really frustrating to have to pick between those two. It's so disappointing that Podence is out. Granted, there's nothing you can do with COVID, but yeah, it is. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where neither player really seems to be getting a grip on things, and I don't know. It was fine to see Traore in the lineup, but yet again, he's just been frustrating.
Yeah, Kim, similar. I mean, I know Trincao tried hard on Saturday, but didn't really do an awful lot. And again, we've got a big run of fixtures coming up, and it feels like neither one of them's done enough to hold down a berth. Were you kind of satisfied, or would you have liked to see Trincao given another shot against, you know, a lesser opposition, so to speak?
Well, initially, no, I wasn't. I was happy with Traore getting a start. I think, you know, Burnley haven't got the paciest defenders, so I thought, and obviously with Traore's strength, I think if we'd have started Trincao, you could have said that, you know, he might have just got muscled off the ball. So just thinking about it before the game, I was happy with Traore starting. I felt like he could really, you know, really test Burnley, which you could argue that he did. But yeah, I think overall with the lineup, there was nothing to be annoyed about, because, you know, Neves was suspended, so Dendonka was the only other option to come in. And then I suppose then when you move on to the bench, it was painful to look at that bench. I think we had two goalkeepers, and then obviously the only options really to bring on were Trincao and Silva, who hasn't had any minutes for a while. So I think that was the most alarming thing that I found when I saw the team sheet. It was the bench more than anything.
Yeah, I think, you know, the fact we can name 9 substitutes, we only named 8. 2 of them were goalkeepers. I'll run through the list because, well, for anyone listening on YouTube, you'll see them. But it was Maldon, Ruddy, Hoover, Trincão, Silva, Kundal, Bueno, and Campbell. I mean, Blake, it doesn't exactly, you know, scream options, does it?
No, I mean, I haven't heard of half of them. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where I just don't know what you do. I mean, we've been screaming that this team has had too few players in it for ages, and it just seems like it's something that's never really going to be fixed at this point. So yeah, it's disappointing, but it's just one of those things that I guess we just kind of have to find a way to get around.
Yeah, I think what I find bonkers, and to be fair, I'm sure we've got listeners of a generation above mine, who, you know, I remember when you could only have 5 subs. And I'm sure there's a generation before me who remembers only having 3 subs. And you know, we've moved to 7. It's been seamless. And since COVID, I think it is, we've had more subs available. And no, not and interestingly, Burnley had 2 sub goalkeepers. Ironically, both former Wolves goalkeepers in Norris and Hennessy. But, you know, it strikes me as odd that, you know, we can't fill a bench. And even if we had, you know, back to, you know, a 7 sub rule, it still would have looked, you know, very heavy with youngsters. And I know we've got injuries to the likes of Neto, Bolly, Mosquera, Podence and Neves out as well. That is 5, you know, squad players, but let's say it's still not great.
Every week we should have of at least 5 senior players that can come on, I think, and change the game, even with injuries. That's what a Premier League team who's, you know, top half should have as a minimum. And to have literally 2 players, one of which he hasn't started, I don't think he's even started a game this season. They were never going to bring a sub on who were going to change the game. And obviously Bruno is it might be sending out a message to the board to say, you know, he didn't bring on a sub, was it, till the 80th minute where Trincão came on. So whether that's just a message to the board to say, look, I haven't got any players good enough to come on to change it at the moment, so it needs to be addressed in January.
Yeah, I think it becomes quite a cyclical thing because our players are tired. We don't have anyone to replace them who are of good enough quality, which means our, you know, everything's kind of going to drop, or we're going to get more injuries because the players are tired, because we've got no one to replace them. We're going to keep going round and round and round, and, you know, players are going to get suspended because we've played nearly half the season now. You know, it's troublesome. But onto the game itself, I mean, first half in particular, we dominated for large parts of it, and we got kind of control of the ball, but we seemed to kind of struggle to get through Burnley unless we're kind of beating them on the counter-attack for a decent amount of time. It was only through a couple of sort of trademark Traore runs that, you know, we got anything. I mean, he got the foul where I think Ben Mee hooked him across the body with his leg, which I thought was an interesting interpretation of a tackle. And of course we had the Traore crossbar chance as well. That was in the sort of the 29th minute, and that was, I guess, for both teams, the first chance on goal, the first really big chance. I think Saad made a couple of saves, but I don't think we tested Pope particularly. Were you screaming for him to pass it to Jimenez? What at that point, you know, we've got it sort of freeze framed in terms of, you know, when he makes the decision. Does he do the right thing for you, Kim, in terms of trying to go it alone, or should he have tried to feed, you know, a natural one goal scorer?
Do you know what, though? At the time, I must say, I didn't even notice that Raul was there, just because it happened in such a flash. And obviously, Traore went past that defender so fast that I didn't see him. However, in hindsight, yes, you know, you'd hope that a player of Traore's calibre would at least, he must have known Raul was there, right? You know, all he needed to do was slip him in, and he must know that Raul's got a better chance of scoring than him. So it's a difficult one, because obviously he was unlucky, you know, went past the defender like he usually does with ease, and it was a great strike. But how many times has Traoré almost like smacked the underside of the bar and almost just like hit it too hard instead of just placing it, you know? So yeah, at the time I didn't even notice that Raul was there almost. I was just very focused on Traoré, but he's got to pass it there. And you would back, if Prudence was in that situation, I would put a lot of money that he would have passed that ball. But I think Traoré is that desperate to start, and any chance that he gets, he just wants to score, that he just doesn't think straight sometimes.
Yeah, Blake, how about you then? How did you kind of interpret it in the moment?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a whole lot to add. I mean, it's just Raul's your centre forward. He's got no one on him. Play it through. Just play it through, and in all likelihood, it's a goal. Granted, you know, it wasn't a poor effort from Adama. You know, he did strike the bar, and had it been a few millimetres lower, probably would have been a goal. But I keep coming back to the word frustrating. It's really, really frustrating to see Adama, because he creates these unbelievable chances that I don't think anyone else would. And this is coming back to sort of what Kim said about Podence. I don't know if Podence even creates this chance in the first place. Sure, he might pass to Jimenez, but is he able to get into this position in the first place? I don't think so. So it's unfortunate, because if Adama actually had something of an end product, he'd be the best bloody footballer in the whole world. But unfortunately, it is frustrating. That being said, if it was a few millimetres lower, we would have all been going lyrical about how unbelievable his run was. So as much as I do say it's frustrating, there is also the element of, you know, he gets his chances, no one else does. So it's just one of those things where if he's on, he's on, and if he's off, he's off. And unfortunately, he's just been off all season, and who knows if he'll ever get on again.
Do you know why I think he's completely like lost his way a bit? I think it's because he's been asked to go inside a lot, and it's just not natural for him to, you know, cut inside and be, it's almost the inverted wingers or whatever you want to call them. I think he's struggling to, it doesn't come natural to him to play that way. So he's almost just overthinking everything. And then obviously just, you know, he gets the ball and doesn't always just go past people like we know he can, which in turn means that the crowd get frustrated and a little bit on his back. And he's a proper confidence player, isn't he? And I'm sure towards the end of the game last night, his confidence was getting worse and worse, because the crowd were getting so frustrated. And so was I. But, you know, it's trying to almost keep getting behind him. And I know at one point some people like towards the bottom of the South Bank were like, because he was right near, were trying to encourage him, because he's a very much a confidence player, and that's what we've got to be careful of, that after that chance and him missing, you know, Hwang missed a chance where he just needed to control the ball and hit it, and he didn't, but you know, the crowd didn't get on his back. So yeah, I just think, although I'm frustrated with him, I think we need to just like try and get behind him if he starts against Liverpool.
Yeah, I agree with both of you massively. I think for me, I think it was Dan, I was going to say friend of the Fancast, Dan Butler, who does a lot on a preview show, said the easy option for Troy is just to pass it to Jimenez. Because it's not an amazingly hard pass, but it absolves him of responsibility. He doesn't he doesn't have to, you know, try and drive past a man, have a shot from an angle that he knows he's not good at. He could just say shift that responsibility onto someone who relishes it. And
Andy, that's another assist to his name, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. It slowly builds up that very fragile confidence he has, and you know, we say this every kind of time he plays, doesn't he? He's the one who, you know, we get the highlight reel for, and he's the one who's kind of creating these chances. But he can't finish them. And, you know, it's not just this season. It's, you know, we're three and a half seasons in now to the Adama Traore project. I know there's certain people in the fan cast like Stu who just bin him off tomorrow if he could and cash in. And, you know, there's still stuff around his contract, which I think, you know, whether that overshadows how he's performing, I don't quite know. Just got to say, we're just kind of screaming for him just to, do what we can all see. That's the easiest option for him, and he doesn't always pick it. My thing with Adama is he's the fastest player in the league. You could pretty much argue he's probably the best player, fastest player with the ball at his feet. But he always takes shots from really far out, and he does everything far away from goal. It's like, why not just try and run as far as you can with this ball into the box? Or, you know, try and take on the goalkeeper, or not in this circumstance, because I think Pope kind of got his positioning right. But, you know, there's been times before he just, like, either starts his run on the halfway line, or just try and go as far as you can. Just commit that, sometimes, just commit that extra player then. But he is eternally frustrating. And
he has to hit the ball, doesn't he? Like, he has to hit it really hard and put his foot through it every time. It's like, can you just not show a little bit of composure and just... And I know he's not Raul, but, like, you know how Raul just, you know, makes it look easy? It's like he just has to do everything 100 mile an hour and just hit it as hard as he can. It's just like... Yeah. Oh, I don't
but
know.
We've seen him do finishes, like, against Man City a few years ago when he got that brace, and both of them were just really calm, just, I don't need to smack the ball. I just need to pass it. Don't worry about the rest. Just
but they're the only two, right? I can't think of any other ones.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. The other player who also kind of started, who didn't play against Norwich, was Dendonka. And I find him a fascinating player to watch. I know Kim's not his biggest fan. But what did we kind of think of how he played? Because I didn't think he played awful, but at the same time, he didn't, you know, set for the world light. I'll go to Blake first, just to kind of save Kim for a second.
It was just fine. I mean, it was one of those things where you didn't really notice him. And, you know, I think this is really a credit to Neves, that Neves doesn't always look like the best player on the pitch, but you always notice when he's not in the squad. And I think tonight was really a night where you really noticed Neves wasn't there. And that's not necessarily to discredit Dendonker. I really like Dendonker, but he just sort of... He's not Neves. At the end of the day, he's not Neves. And, I don't know, he wasn't bad. He wasn't really good, but he wasn't bad either. So it was just sort of meh.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful way of describing him, to be honest. He can be the colour beige an awful lot. And I say this as a fan of Dendonka. Kim, did yesterday's game do anything to sort of help sway you at all from, I guess, your thoughts on him last season, or not really?
No, do you know what? I'm not going to be harsh on him, because I agree with what Blake said, really. I think the key point is how much we miss Neves, but we all know that Dendonka's not going to control a game. He's not that kind of player, so that's not a criticism of him. But I mean, in previous seasons, Dendonka's been that guy that's almost popped up with a goal here and there, made some good runs into the box, but I don't really remember him doing any of that last night. Like, he didn't stand out, and he just didn't do a lot for me. Like, you know, I thought Moutinho had a decent game again, you know, was sort of in the midst of a lot of things, you know, trying to pull the team forward. But again, Moutinho's not Neves either. So I think the key point here is how much we miss Neves and how he's been in great form this season, and just almost dictating the play and at the heart of every performance where we've done well, i.e. West Ham, we played well, was it Everton? He's been almost the man of the match in all of those games, if I remember rightly, because he's just at the heart of everything that we do. So yeah, I'm not gonna slate Dendonka too much because he is what he is, but I personally would have liked to seen a bit more of that, I don't know, late runs into the box, or you know, getting on the end of a corner, and that's really all he can bring for me.
Do you think with Dendonka, he just needs to be a little bit more aggressive and like assert himself in games? Because he's got, obviously, there's a player in there. You know, you don't play for Belgium unless you've got a level of quality about you. And like, you look at his size and his stature, but he doesn't kind of quite play with like any aggression in his game. And not in like a, you know, I'm looking him to, you know, fly elbows like Loughton, or let's say kind of kick lumps out of people like Ben Mee, or any of that. But I know, like, you don't always see him sort of, let's say, get a foot in that much, in the same way you see Neves, you know, really thrive in that, and even Moutinho as well, really thrives in that, in those duels as well. You never really see Donk do that. Or even just when he's aggressive on the ball, he doesn't move the ball, you know, with a tempo a lot of the time. And you know, we'll talk about, I guess, sort of Wolves failing to kind of going forward, and I think part of it is because he can't dictate a game, but he can't, let's say, even kind of going for box, just like having that physical presence about him. I don't know what it is, because you say he's 6'2", I just don't quite know.
He doesn't get as stuck in as the other two, and he's built a lot more than the other two, which is like, so that's what I'm saying. What is he actually bringing to the team now? Like, I just think he's a little bit out of his depth at this level. That's the be all and end all, isn't it, really?
He feels like someone who's reached his potential, you know? It just kind of feels like he's just sort of yellow. He's not really going down. He's not really going up. He's just sort of staying the same way as he sort of always has been with us, so... I don't know. I mean, yeah, it would really help if he would become more aggressive, but then there's always the question of, is he going to be just like Sace and get a booking every time he dives in with a challenge? So it's just one of those things that he isn't an aggressive player, so you just have to recognize that.
Yeah. I mean, like, even I don't say we're several seasons into having him, and I still don't know what his position is or what his best position is. And, you know, he often, for me, sometimes he plays, when he's in midfield, he plays like a defender. And when he's in defence, he plays like a midfielder. And, you know, there's either going to be a point where he has, you know, it's all going to click together and he's going to be a fantastic, you know, number six. Or he's just kind of going to have a career of, you know, mediocrity to a degree, without kind of sounding
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, exactly. But he doesn't even seem to kind of quite be there. I find it sort of eternally frustrating with him at the moment. But one person I did want to highlight from yesterday's game was John Brooks, the referee. It was the first game officiating at this level, and I can't remember the last time I saw that solid referee performance. And I mean, I don't really like slagging off a referee, because they're never on the show, at least. Because they're never usually the reason, like, why you haven't won. But the way he controlled the game for me, and Burnley are, how do I describe? We won't have many Burnley listeners, will we? No one's really good.
They haven't got many fans, have they?
No, they haven't got many fans. I can't imagine how many of our, you know, quite literal tens of listeners we have will be listening to it. They're just a bastard of a side. And it's, you know, they are physical. They will make themselves known, but also will be very chippy if anything happens. And I thought, you know, particularly the Hwang Loughton incident, where, you know, Loughton goes in with a bit of an elbow, and it was a strong yellow. I think it probably what, and I don't think it really quite was a red, but it was nasty. And then Hwang sort of doing a bit of a lash out, which was silly. And again, a different referee might have pulled one of those up for a red card. And he just handled it. He took his time. I think it might have gone to VAR as well. But, you know, say, and it wasn't just on that occasion. He let the game flow. There wasn't any, you know, silliness. He just seemed to have done a really good job. It's like, I know, refreshing to see a good refereeing performance.
To be fair, I think it's interesting to bring up because every single game this season, I've been fairly, I don't know if I'd say happy with the refereeing, but it's been better than I've remembered it. And I think it's really helpful that, you know, there's sort of been this unwritten rule that they're going to let players and let the game be a little more aggressive and rough and tumble. But what I think is interesting about that as well, I know it's kind of going off topic a little bit, is that I think it's kind of impacted atmosphere as well.
Mm.
Because so many times when Molyneux sort of started to rock the boat, it's been because the referee's kind of gone against us in one way or another. And I've never really noticed this season any time where I've kind of felt like the referee was really doing anything that wrong. So, yeah, it certainly is kind of interesting to note that I think there's been sort of a new age of refereeing in the Prem. And, yeah, I think this highlights it. I mean, I think you're right that many other referees, and I think in past seasons there would have been red cards issued in this game, maybe even a couple, but not anymore.
Yeah, Kim, I guess we can all talk about referee or is that, do you think that either Lowton or Wang should have seen red, or do you think actually, again, it was just fair retribution? Yellow cards for both of them, we both get to fight another day.
I think it was fair in the end. However, at the time when I saw Huang lash out and loads of people around me were just like, oh my God, this is going to like go to VAR and then he's going to be overturned to a red. So it was pretty much, I breathed a sigh of relief because from my seat, you literally see him like proper lash out and a lot of refs and maybe it should have been a red, to be honest, because you can't just lash out like that, can you really? So, yeah, I think overall it was, as you guys have said, it could have become foul central, couldn't it, that game, because of how physical Burnley can be. It could have almost turned into almost like the Brentford game, where it just was an awful spectacle in the end. But yeah, as I say, because no one's really talking about the ref, I think that's probably the first time this season where there hasn't been anything slightly controversial that our fans have seemed happy with the performance, and it's been more about the performance of the team. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll go from the positive of the referee to, I guess, the negative of Wolves' attacking prowess in this game. And, you know, we could almost do a bit of a copy and paste from the Norwich podcast. But once again, we were just a bit lackluster going forward. We created a few more chances second half. Wang had a couple of bites at the cherry. Traore had had a couple of shots as well. But we really seemed to sort of struggle to kind of gain any momentum going forwards and have a level of sustained pressure throughout. Do you think it's a problem that's easily solved, or do you think that it's something we're going to have to sort of very much live with until I guess until we kind of get some new recruits in, because it's a bit say we've got what, six more fixtures now in December or something silly. It's a very busy month. And we've got a very tough couple of games, notably for one of the weekends. So, but Blake, I guess what are your sort of thoughts on it at the moment? Because we know we can play with really great tempo and, you know, have fantastic movement, but it's just not happening at the moment, is it?
I think to start off this conversation, we actually kind of have to discuss the defence, because I think in years prior, we would have lost this game. This had all the markings of, we attacked for 90% of the game. We had one counter-attack at the end. It went in. Game over. So many times we've seen that with Wolves, especially in the first season when we were in the Prem. So I think, first of all, I think we need to give some credit to sort of the back, whatever, three, four, however many, that they have sort of shored things up a little bit more than certainly in past seasons. I mean, I think we've got, is it three or two clean sheets in a row?
Three. West Ham, Norwich, and
I remember a time when Wolves could not get a clean sheet for their lives, And I think that really needs to be stated first, that we're even having this conversation about the attack at all, because I think it could have easily been, oh, bloody hell, another 90th minute winner that we've conceded when we dominated the game. But anyways, now following up with the attack, yes, it is frustrating, but I think we also have to remember that we're playing Burnley. This is Burnley's game. They frustrate teams into 0-0 draws. And yes, it's unfortunate that you know, we didn't quite have it, and that we haven't had it, you know, for, I don't know, some time, especially after Norwich. I mean, that was just brutal watching. It was better tonight, in all honesty. But, yeah, it is frustrating, but it's Burnley. That's sort of my way of looking at it. It's just, these kind of things are always going to happen with Burnley, so whatever.
That's fair. I think, I guess it depends on, I guess, sort of how wide you look at, I guess, the issue, whether I think if it's over the last two games, then I definitely agree with you that Burnley, everyone knows how disciplined they are defensively. And I think if you play, it doesn't help when you play into their hands, that we were doing sometimes, it was just like, let's just try and knock the ball into the box with just Jimenez in there to try and win a header against like three defenders who are all like pushing him out of the way to get to the ball first. Kim, how about you?
I thought I was absolutely fuming with our tempo. That was the key thing that made me so angry after that game. Like, I'm just glad we didn't have to record a podcast last night, because I've obviously calmed down a bit now. However, it's just like, we're playing Burnley, so we need to move the ball faster, because they're obviously going to just be deep. So, and obviously having Neves, who dictates the tempo, is probably one of the reasons why we particularly struggled last night. And I think it is an issue genuinely even when he's in the team. However, I think it made it even more of an issue last night, because he wasn't there. But it's just, there wasn't any, like, at the end of the game, and we're literally just passing it around the back, I was just like, what are we doing? It's like, there's no movement, you know, the wing-backs weren't as good, like, you know, as they have been against sort of, you know, West Ham, where they were fantastic and pivotal to our play. I just don't understand why we have gone to this really slow tempo, because I don't feel like that's what Bruno Lage has been asking the team to do. He was the one that was just like, you know, pushing the team on. And I just, you know, obviously he's coaching the team, but I just can't see him wanting us to play that slowly, because if we'd have played all night, I don't feel like we would have scored, because we didn't create enough chances in the end.
No, we really didn't test Pope enough. I think even like, you know, Traore had a chance. I think Huang had a couple. I think he had one in the, I think it was in the first half as well, where it was out almost just on the edge of the box. We didn't get any power behind it. It's like not testing. It's not, you know, really made it stretching them. My sort of two cents on it is I think we're getting tired to a degree. I think that they don't quite have that, A, for rotation, but B, almost a good rotation. That we've always kind of discussed Traore, Trincao, and sort of no one's kind of making that position their own. But we don't have the midfield options to have that. We're screaming, you know, last year that our midfield trio, who we've got, don't have that dynamism, so to speak. And the only one who really offers it is Neves, who wasn't playing at the last night. So we are struggling. I mean, as Blake kind of alluded to, we're fortunate to have a really solid defence at the moment, and they all seem to be doing their part. It's just making sure, you know, we can kind of match it going forwards, because we've got the players, we've got the talent. It's just not quite clicking into place, is it?
Remember when Cody used to like literally do his like crossfield passes, and we'd almost just break from that point? And like, I feel like there was chances where we could have broke on Burnley, but we were just like, even when Traore had the ball, it's like, just run with the ball. Like, you literally get past a player every time. And he was just like thinking about what he was going to do. And that it was just all too slow. Anytime we had a chance to break on Burnley, we needed to be quicker, because that's where we would have scored the goal, e.g., you know, the Traoré chance. But other than that, I felt like there wasn't enough breakaways, and that's how you beat teams like Burnley who sit in. So I'm going to stop now because I'm starting to go into a rant, but it just drove me mad, that the tempo. Oh.
Well, we'll wrap it up by just covering our, who we thought our man of the match was, because I think it's been great for, we've had a few games this season where it's been impossible to choose, like against West Ham, like against Everton. I think this one's a bit of a hard one because I don't quite know who really stood out. It's probably going to be someone who I don't think we've mentioned. So who did you have for your man of your match, Blake?
It's funny because I don't really know who, because it just sort of seemed like everybody was equally mediocre.
Yeah.
Maybe Cody, because Cody actually seemed, again, we did have a really good defense for this game, and Cody actually seemed to be putting out some balls and sort of taking up some of the slack that we had since Neves wasn't there. But other than that, I just don't really know who to put forward. I mean, Saw wasn't really tested, so it's no real point talking about him. Kilman looked great, but he wasn't really needed all that much. So, yeah, it's just, what do you do? Who do you pick when everybody is just, as you kind of alluded to with Dendonker, beige? Just run-of-the-mill, mediocre?
Kim, how about you?
Everyone was mediocre. However, I still think Kilman was probably the best out of a bad bunch in terms of, I don't think he put a foot wrong. He looked composed. The small things that he had to do, he just did it with ease. And obviously, it had to be a defender, really. Like, I don't think anyone looked great going forward. So, yeah, I'd go Kilman for me.
I was going to say, interestingly, mine would have been Cody or Kilman, chiefly because Chris Wood is Wolves' nemesis. He always scores against us. He always bullies us. Yeah. But actually, between primarily Cody and Kilman, they nullified him. They didn't let him do the things he's good at. And, you know, he ended up getting hooked after half an hour, which he wasn't happy about. Then bringing on Jay Rodriguez. And you know what? I'll take that. I'm almost tempted to give it to Connor Cody because he didn't get booked, as opposed to Kilman. But as I think this might have been the hardest man of the match I think we've had to do this season, just because no one really, you know, stuck their heads above the parapet. That wraps up Burnley. We'll be back after this to cover bits on injuries, the December running, and a little bit on Liverpool. But first, we've got a few ads. Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design, and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references, and maybe even a bit of football talk. Attention parents and students, we have an incredible exclusive offer from our friends at ProPrep. This is the perfect study tool for university students undertaking science, technology, engineering or maths related modules, and it can halve your studies time. ProPrep provides bite-sized videos relevant to the module or course, which can be accessed from any device at any time. It's already helped over 500,000 students pass exams so far. Basically, they provide customized STEM study tools that match your syllabus. Long lectures are condensed into short, clear, concise video tutorials. And after a video, you can go through what you've just learned with interactive exercises, practice questions, so you'll be ready for your exam. You can even submit questions to ProPrep professors and receive video answers within 24 hours. ProPrep's created a special offer just for our listeners, alongside the 90min football network. All you need to do is go to their website, proprep.uk/info/football, for more info. And listeners of our show can sign up for a 30-day free trial now. No credit card information is required as well, which is always an absolute bugbear of mine whenever I get asked to sign up to a trial. That's PREP .uk/info/football. So make sure you go check out ProPrep, the ultimate study tool. There we go. Right, back to the football, guys and girls. Before we get on to the December running, because I'm really kind of keen to hear your pitches, guys, in terms of how you think we're going to be doing, I just want to do a quick plug for the Fancast. You'll have seen that we are in December and we are on the countdown to Christmas. Now, to make everyone's lives a bit easier for Wolves fans, we are doing a Fancast giveaway for the first 20 days of Advent, where we are basically kind of giving away fun stocking fillers in time for Christmas. They range from the, I'm not joking, the bizarre to the ridiculous. Me and Dan had a lot of fun compiling it. I think yesterday's was a Wolves Christmas jumper. Today's was a piss on the Albion badge. I won't give away the rest, but the reason we are doing 20 days is just so we can get the postage out, so little Timmy will be able to get his Wolves branded tie clip before Christmas to open on Christmas Day. So make sure you're checking us out on Twitter. Really simple to enter. As I say, we've got prizes every day, and we're really happy with the last one as well. I think it'll be a really good one on day 20. Right, so December fixtures. I hadn't realised up until about a week ago, A, how many games we were playing in December, nor how bad it looked. I really think this is going to be a December not to remember. I'll run you through the fixtures, guys. So obviously we've played Burnley yesterday on the first, but upcoming we still have six more matches. So we start with Liverpool at home, then we've got Man City away, Brighton away, Chelsea at home, Watford at home, and then Arsenal away. I mean, we've got essentially the top three within the next four games. You include Arsenal as well, who are Arsenal. You know, they are Schrodinger's football team, whether they are good or bad. How are you guys feeling with this run-up, especially with the small squad? Are you excited to see how we're going to play against, I guess, higher caliber opposition, see if we can exploit the space, or are we in for a very cold December? What do you think, Blake?
I don't think it is tense, and I sort of referenced a while ago that this was going to be our big test. This was really going to show, has Bruno really made a difference at Wolves? And I think this really is going to be the run of fixtures where we really find out, are Wolves going to be capable of finishing in the top half? Could we even have a run at Europe? What's going to happen with that? And I think that's really where we're going to sort of... This run of fixtures, I think, is probably going to be our most important, maybe, of the whole season. So I'm scared. I'm very scared, admittedly. Because, I mean, you look at the face of it and it just looks like games that Wolves either are going to struggle in or have historically struggled in. So I don't know. I think we'd be lucky to get 7 or 8 points out of this. But who knows? Who knows? I mean, Wolves were once the team that could beat the big six all the time. So who knows? Maybe Bruno can inspire that run of form yet again.
Kim, are you feeling optimistic about this? How are you sort of, you know, looking at these fixtures coming up, a lot of drinking opportunities as well, no doubt, for yourself?
Indeed. I think I'm most scared about the Watford and Brighton fixtures, just because we really need to get some points on the board for those. I think the other ones, they're obviously a free hit, so I'm not worried about playing Liverpool at home on Saturday, because I think you never know. Why couldn't we? At the start of the season, who was it? We drew with, was it Man United? Did we draw? I can't remember.
We lost.
Anyway,
1-0.
We played well against, oh yeah, it was just 1-0, wasn't it? And then Tottenham and Leicester, well, we played really well in those games. So I'm not scared. I don't think we're going to win Saturday. I don't think we're going to beat Man City, but we're not going to get battered. You know, so why not? I'd still back us to beat one of them. I'm not sure which one, but I think we might get something out of either Liverpool, Man City or Chelsea.
Okay, so I guess that sort of brings me on to my next question. I'll start with Kim as she sort of started off predictions. So 18 points left to play for in December. How many points are we getting from the next six games?
Okay, so I'll go for a win against Watford, so three, draw against Brighton, four, 7 points. So win against Watford, draw against Brighton, and we'll win one of these horrible fixtures, but I'm not sure which one yet. So I'll go 7 points.
Okay. Blake, how about you? Higher or lower?
Let's say higher.
Okay.
Podence will be back from COVID. Neves will be back from suspension. We're ready to go. It's game time.
Oh, higher than seven. I had seven in my head. I don't, similar to you, Kim, I don't quite know where we're going to win and draw. I've got a feeling we won't beat both Brighton and Watford. I think we'll end up drawing with one of them and winning two games elsewhere, maybe Chelsea, or even Liverpool, potentially. Who knows? But yeah, it's a tough old running, which is why maybe if beating Burnley would have been, you know, quite helpful for us. But we're in a good league position. I think even if we have a tough month, you know, we'll still be in kind of good stead, I think, come January. And hopefully with a few more reinforcements, we'll get there. I mean, it wasn't a million years ago that it pops up on my timeline that... Do you remember under Kenny Jackett how we used to have awful Novembers? Like, that we used to constantly lose, like, five games in a row in November. No other month, but we'd get absolutely spanked every November. So we're used to it if it does go a bit downhill next month. One thing I wanted to sort of chat is Wolves got a couple of players doing really well out on loan, particularly... Deion Sanderson and Ryan Giles in the Championship for the Blues and Cardiff, respectively. I wouldn't quite say it's been rumoured, it's been almost murmured rather than a rumour, about them sort of their potential first team opportunities. Would you guys say tomorrow, if Sace picks up an injury and we have to recall Deion Sanderson, let's say, would you kind of be happy about him returning and getting a first team opportunity?
I don't think he's not really tested at this level, is he? I'd be a bit worried. And I think when I saw that we were going to talk about the two young guys, it's not a reflection on them, but I'd be a bit worried if we were recalling them. I'd almost think, oh my God, does that mean we're not actually going to sign anyone in January? You know, with Sace obviously going away, Bolly obviously not fit and potentially going away, we're going to be really thin at the back. So maybe we bring Sanderson in just for cover. But again, I just really hope we do bring a new centre back in January, because I think we're going to struggle without, you know, suspension, injuries, and obviously COVID as well. We're going to struggle in this period if we're not going to... We're going to have to play the same team week in, week out.
I think that we kind of need all hands on deck. And I don't see... Even if we do splash the cash in January, us bringing in more than two players. So, I mean, as nice as it would be to keep Dion on loan and just sort of let him develop more. I mean, we're naming two goalkeepers in our subs bench, and I think for the two matches previous to this one, we had an under 16s player goalkeeper in the subs bench. So it's like, we need somebody that if there's something that goes horrifically wrong, we can throw somebody out there and salvage some sort of result. So if it does turn out that Dion comes back or anybody else comes back, fine. I don't necessarily think I'm jumping for joy at it, but fine, because we need legs. We need fresh legs.
I don't think it's good for their development, though, is it?
No. No, it really isn't.
No.
It's not really good for their development they're playing week in and week out. And, you know, it's a decent level as a young player to at least test themselves at. So, like, I just don't think it's going to work. And, you know, it's going to be the same situation with Gibbs White, isn't it? He's going to come, that you know, they get recalled and they, you know, play one game here and there. And it just doesn't help them in the long run. And it won't really help Wolves because we need them to develop at a decent level and hopefully in the future either come back to Wolves or, you know, sell them for a decent fee. So, yeah, I prefer not to have to recall them personally.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. But by the sounds of it, it's going to be sort of a last-ditch scenario if we are hit by injuries. And I think, again, it loops back to the size of the squad more than anything else. And to be fair, both of them are doing really well on loan, but I wouldn't have Ryan Giles starting ahead of Ake Nwori at the moment. I wouldn't have Sanderson, you know, in that back three unless we needed to, despite how well they're doing in the Championship. And I say, ideally, I'd love them to kind of complete a whole season and then be banging on the door next season. But we'll see if we can get there. I mean, one player we kind of noted upon and is, I guess, causing the issue, so to speak, is Willy Bolly, who I think he's played one game this season. And he just can't seem to get fit at all in 2021, to be honest, the entire of this year. He seems to have really struggled. You know, I think he had COVID and long COVID. He's had, you know, different injuries left, right and centre. Do you think we almost just need to, I don't know, just give him that extra bit of time? Because, I don't know, do you think he's been rushing himself back too quickly? I guess, what do we do about Willy Bolly? Blake, what are your sort of thoughts? Because he's been, I think, over Nuno, he was probably our most accomplished defender, but we haven't really seen him do anything in about 12 months now, you'd argue.
Yeah, it's tough because obviously there's not really too much you can do with injury. And the other problem is that our back three has just been so consistent. Do you really risk taking one of them out to put Bolly in? And I know Bolly has been such a rock for us in the past, but coming back from injury, there's no guarantee that he's going to be the same player. There's no guarantee that he's going to snap right back into his defensive role and be the player that he was. So it's really, I think, quite unfortunate that he's sort of had this sort of spell of COVID and injury and all of this different stuff. Just sort of at the worst time, and now it's sort of like a, I don't know. Again, as you said, it's better to have fresh legs than not. So it would be kind of, I think, better for the team if we could sort of rotate around some of those players in that back three. But I don't really know what you do with them.
Yeah, Kim, I feel really drastic when I say this and really like headliney. Do you still see a future for Bolly at Wolves?
Because I think I said on the last podcast, actually, I said I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in the summer. And that's quite a big thing to say because he's on his day when fit. He's probably still our best defender. But I'm starting to have doubts now. Are we actually going to see him, you know, play for Wolves again? Because it's all a bit strange and bizarre because I'm not sure we really know what's happening. Like, what injury does he have? He just seems to have all these sort of knocks and all this, you know. I don't know if he's had effects from COVID as well. Like, he had COVID and then he sort of had long COVID. I'm not sure that's true, but I'm sure that's what I read.
That's what I read as well.
Yeah, so it's one of those because I think if he on his day, he's still probably should be in the team if he's fit, you know. For me, I'd have Kilman at left centre back, and or even Bolly preferred to play on the left, didn't he? To be fair, so I would, you know, probably have Sace drop out and put Bolly in. But at the moment, obviously the team's performing well, and it would be a risk really to start him because he's obviously going to be so lacking match fitness. So yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah. Moving on to Saturday's game against title contenders Liverpool. As mentioned, our preview show is out for that. But One thing I wanted to highlight was this is the first time Jota will be back at Molineux in front of a crowd. How do you think reception is going to be for him?
I don't know. He might get a small round of applause when he comes out of the tunnel, but maybe after the game as well. But beyond that, I think it'll kind of be like Nuno, where there wasn't really too much. There was a little bit, but I don't know. I think it's hard because Jota wasn't really here all too long. It's not really like Nuno, where we kind of had this sort of mutual sort of respect for each other like we kind of did with Nuno as manager. So I don't really think there's much really to honour him for. I mean, I know he's done some unbelievable things for the club, don't get me wrong, but he just kind of left after that season, but it just kind of felt like his heart never really was at Wolves, I guess, and I don't know. I don't know if that deserves a welcome or not.
Kim, how are you going to react when he... I don't know if he will start, to be honest, but, you know, if he comes onto the pitch, are you going to cheer jubilantly, boo aggressively, or just it is what it is?
Do you know what? I feel quite passionate about this subject. Not specifically Jota, but just obviously with the Grealish thing yesterday as well. It's like, why? I'm the kind of person that I will clap Diogo Jota because I think he's improved immensely moving from Wolves to Liverpool. He's obviously made a step up because, you know, Liverpool are probably in the top three teams in the Premier League. So fair enough. But I will not clap him before the game, during the game, because why would you? He's on the opposition team. After the game, I'm all for. But, like, booing, like, is just going to make him play better. And obviously, he's bound to score. Like, I'm literally going to bet on Jota scoring because I know it will happen in the hope that I'm going to jinx him. So, yeah, I just don't really get it because I'm surprised there's not been, like, a Twitter conversation about it in all seriousness because there's those people who want tomorrow, to, like, literally bow down, who want to bow down to him, and then the people who literally want to, like, boo him and, like, you know, call him a Judas, whereas I'm just, like, just let's look at this logically, you know? So,
yeah, you're asking football fans to think rationally, Kim. That's your first mistake in this. But yeah, I think come maybe about midday Friday is when the debate about how we should react and whether, you know, he's dead to me or, you know, no, he deserves, you know, he got us into a semi-final of the FA Cup or... I think I'm on the side of you, Kim. You know what? When he comes out to do his warm-up, I'll give him a little clap then. When he's playing, no. Like, he's a member of the opposition full-time. You know what? If he comes and claps the South Bank or whatever, I'll more than applaud that guy because, as I say, he did give us three great, you know, three good years of service. But, you know, the club were a means to an end for him, as most football clubs are for players, and, you know, can't begrudge him about taking that next step up. But, he's bound to score Saturday, isn't he? Let's be honest. He scored against us last season. I think if people do boo him, it's only going to fuel him because he's that sort of player as well. I know, Kim, you think we're going to lose, but can I get a score prediction?
I'm going to say 3-0 to Liverpool. I just think, no, and that's not a reflection on us. I just think they're unplayable at the moment. Like, genuinely, like, I can't see us scoring, but I can't see it being a tight game. So yeah, 3-0.
As much as I agree with Kim, I'm going to be the optimistic one, and I'm going to say we're going to draw 1-1. I don't think it's going to happen, but
you two keep switching the roles in terms of which one of you is going to be optimistic and pessimist in this. And I can't quite, you know, I know where Standiff Stew's on. I know where I stand on it. You know, what you two having different opinions on various things, I can't cope.
But hang on a minute. I said that we'd beat Burnley 3-0, and look how that turned out.
True.
So like, you know.
Yeah, good point. I mean, one thing I've learned doing podcast, and I said it on the Anfield Wrap earlier. Don't know why I'm giving them a plug, but whatever. Whenever I predict Wolves to draw, it secretly means I think we're going to lose, but I can't quite admit it. So I also went 1-1 with them. So I'm going to stick with that answer, because I can't quite see us getting absolutely, you know, properly hammered. I think realistically it might be a valiant 2-0 defeat where they score like really early on. We battle, we look, you know, Traore has some chances, Jimenez has a go, and then they kill us off, you know, 10 minutes to go or something. I think that's
the most likely outcome. Yeah, to be fair, that's
how I think the game will go. But fingers crossed, you know, we actually turn up, Neves as a stormer. Let's wrap up the show with some quick questions from Twitter Corner. Thank you, everyone who's got in contact. First up, we have one from Elliot Rollison. Would you rather have a season full of 0-0 draws or half a season of wins and half a season of 1-0 losses? I'm going to go for win half the time because you get more points.
Well, I mean, yeah, if this were the 70s, then fair enough. But yeah, nowadays you get 3 points for a win, one for a draw. It mathematically, it's just better off if you win half and lose half.
And yeah. Plus, it's more exciting. Nil-nil. Yeah,
I was going to say,
we've had 2 0-0s in the past 2 games, and it's been like watching paint dry. So, yeah.
I was going to say, maybe you change the question slightly for, you know, I don't know, we win 13 games and then lose the other games, maybe.
If it was level on points, I still think you want to win games because, again, it's no fun just to go to 0-0 draws every single time. I mean,
even see goals from the opposition then, do you? At least you're losing 1-0 and you see a worldie from, I don't know, flipping Kevin De Bruyne, at least that, you know, that's something.
Now, if you said 4-4 draws every game, now that's a different question.
I was going to say, I was going to say it. The question needs expanding on because I think we've kind of broken it very quickly. Right, my man Todd DeWitt from, I was going to say he's not from Colorado, well, he's from Colorado, but he no longer lives in Colorado. But his question is, which current Wolves player would you pick to be your tag team partner and which player would you pick to be your hype man? So it's a two-parter.
What's a hype man?
Oh, I thought you were going to go for what the tag team partner is. I don't quite know where a hype man fits into wrestling. It sounds really bad. I can feel myself. I need to stop talking.
Is it wrestling?
I'm assuming tag teams for wrestling, isn't it? Forgive me, Blake, you might have slightly more knowledge on this than me.
I don't really, but I'm assuming by hype man, they kind of mean that sort of...
Yeah, person.
Tertiary character that sort of eggs on the wrestler sort of from the side of the ring.
You kind of G's up. Because I'm thinking, like, you know, from a rapper has a hype man. Does a wrestler have something similar? I feel like I'm going to need to phone Andy in a second, or I'm going to get a really, really vicious text in about 5 hours' time when people are actually listening to a show. But yeah, all right. So we'll try our best. Who would you have as a tag team partner first and foremost? Because I'm...
What's a tag team partner then? I don't even know what that is.
It's who's... So if you're kind of wrestling 2v2, so who would be your partner if you were wrestling two other people?
Okay. Oh, that's easy then, isn't it? Traore?
Yeah. Well, it might actually be Saw as well, because Saw is insane, and I think he would be a really fun character to have in a wrestling sort of environment.
Saw would dye his beard different colours.
Exactly. And he's limber as well, so he could dive all over the ring.
Has potential to be a really interesting wrestler from my incredibly limited knowledge, as you're finding out. Pre-injury, I might have said Bolly.
Yeah, Bolly would have been a good pick.
Yeah, I think Troy is a good shout. You just need to like make sure he kind of understands what he's doing. It's like, no, you don't throw the table now. You need to hit with a chair. I'll say little wrestling joke for you guys there. I'm very proud of that one. Right, we'll knock on to the next one because we've got two more. In the honour of the Rainbow Flames pre-match yesterday, we've not even talked about that. I was going to say I won't tangent off too much, but I did think the work they did yesterday and actually the club as a whole, what we're doing around the LGBT community and especially kind of Connor Cody picking up, is fantastic and does deserve a lot of recognition from the wider footballing public. And I know Burnley also do a decent amount as well, particularly with Ben Mee. But anyway, back to the question. So in honour of the Rainbow Flames pre-match, if you can have any colour be cremated, trying my best with Stu's question. If you could have any colour flame to be cremated with, what would it be? Yeah, I did think that was correct. So, lovely question from Stu on a Thursday night.
I think it would have to be green. I think that's the most sort of badass way to go. Just green flames engulfed.
It feels quite potiony.
Yeah.
Kim, how about you?
It's not really much more to say on that.
How do you see a final axe on Earth being?
I suppose just because they're quite girly, aren't they? The colours, like the purple or the pink. So yeah. I'd like to think myself as fairly girly. I guess so. One of those. I thought the light show before with the colours was nice as well, by the way.
Yeah.
That was quite different.
Yeah, they do a really good job. You know what I'd do? I'd go gold and black, because I'm a proper fan.
I don't think that's a colour, though, in the flame.
I think there's I think we could probably
get away with having an orange flame. Like, that won't be too hard.
No,
I mean, black we'd have to work on. But we'll get the people in the lab working on it. Right, last one, and I probably should have given you some warning on this one, so I'm going to stretch it out, is this is from Cage Fighting Pod, so I'm assuming it's from Matt, judging by the fact he's on a night shift at the moment. Go check out Cage Fighting if you're a fan of films. There's your plug, guys. You don't need to badger me. What's your favourite film, favourite song? Ooh, with Night in the title.
Shook Me All Night Long. By AC/DC, no question about it. Now, if it can be in the chorus and still count, then I would say Starry Eyed Surprise, just to really throw it back.
I was gonna say, I feel like I probably should have put more in this. The only two I could think of, and I felt really bad at this, chiefly because I misread the question and thought it was going to be favorite film. Because it's, you know, they do a fucking podcast about films. And I was like, maybe Friday Night Lights, something like that. And the only songs I can think with Night in the title were All Night Long, Lionel Richie, and also Silent Night, because it's Christmas time.
Ah.
Yeah.
Kim, any guesses?
All Night Long is mine. All Night Long, Lionel Richie, I think. Be mine, or to be honest, for the indie fans out there, it's not a song, but the Cribs had their last album was called Night Network. So whether that qualifies, I don't know.
I think we can expand it to albums as well. Mm. Razorlight Up All Night, was that? No, have I just made up an album? I'm sure, Razorlight's first album was like Up All Night or something like that. That's gonna bug me now. Well, that'll be a very brief Google, which will be kind of quite boring for me. But that's probably a really good place to end the show, talking about indie music. You can go check that out on the Indie Football Wolves fan.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I've just Googled it, Rich. Up All Night. Yes.
Yeah, I had Golden Touch on that album.
Yeah.
Oh, God, nostalgia. There we go. It ain't what it used to be, is it? Right, that's probably a perfect place to wrap up today's show. We will be back on Sunday evening reviewing the Liverpool game. As I mentioned, our preview of the game is out now as well on YouTube and in all your podcast places. Keep up to date with all things Wolves at Wolves Fancast. That's our handle across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, you name it, we're there. As I mentioned, we are doing our Fancast ad thing giveaway at the moment, so get involved with that for some fun prizes. I think that about covers it from ourselves. Again, as always, big shout out to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media and the 90 Min Football Network. Until next time, it's bye from Blake.
See you, everybody.
It's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.